Final Play Podcast would like to welcome you to the following presentation of the National Rugby League.
Now, you ready? Let's do it.
Let's do it. Lots and lots and lots of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, let's get straight into it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. We'll go through round 19 of the National Rugby League, starting with the Thursday night game that, while I didn't pick this game because I didn't actually, I've got the tick, but I didn't actually pick this game because I forgot to put the Thursday tip in. So I wouldn't have picked the Raiders beating the Eels 12-10. I'm very sure I wouldn't have picked the Raiders beating the Eels 12-10.
No, definitely not that kind of scoreline as well. I think, especially with the way that sort of first half sort of went as well, you know, being nil all at half time, you know, the first time since round one, 2019, that a score has been nil all at half time, which was, I'm pretty sure it was like Parramatta and the Dragons. That was like the season opener on a Thursday night that sort of bared the fruits of nil all. While Parramatta looked, I think, fairly inept and limp in attack, I still thought what they threw at Canberra defended really well on their goal line.
Yeah, I thought so as well. I guess Parramatta, I don't think they look, Gutherson, I noticed, tend to move a bit more into that sort of front line, being that Mitchell Moses wasn't there. And I guess, you know, he had no choice. Jake Arthur's a young man, like a very young man. So he kind of had to, and because there was no go forward, like there was no line breaks, there was no, you know, just he had to move forward. But you're right. I mean, it was just repelled by Canberra at every sort of stretch and stat. Although it's interesting towards the end, and this and proves on the possession that the Eels had most of the possession.
They had lopsided possession.
Yeah. So it's just to prove the point of what you said anyway, that that Canberra withheld them out, even though like the Eels kept pushing and pushing and pushing.
That's right. It just didn't look like they were really sort of throwing a whole lot at Canberra. I don't think, like you said, with Dylan Brown there, who's improving out of sight, but he definitely needs that sort of calming influence of Mitchell Moses there. Like, you know, Dylan Brown is a good player when paired with Mitchell Moses, but when he's there by himself and has basically given the team to steer around, it doesn't look as good as what it does with Moses there. So that, like you said, yeah, Gutherson had to sort of push up into, I guess, a playmaker's type role more than what he probably would have liked. But they just look like that. The Ferguson try was crazy. Like, sorry, not the Ferguson try. The Dylan Brown try off the Ferguson chip was just crazy. They had to create just something out of nothing because they weren't getting, you know, a lot of structure from their offense on Canberra's goal line.
Answer me this: how has no one and even Eels decided to not re-sign Blake Ferguson yet? Forget the age.
I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going on there.
He's 31, but surely he can prove it at least that he can be in, you know, in any club as a veteran.
Apart from this game, he's come back in this game, but he's fallen out of flavor for the young kid Hayes Dunster out on that right wing. So I don't know, like, whether it's a training thing. They don't feel that he's, you know, picking up the slack at training, or I just don't know what's going on there. But there'll be teams out there that'll be looking at him, and I sort of squarely,
I'm just surprised no one has.
I point an arrow at the Roosters at the moment. They've got outside backs going down left, right, and center at the moment.
And they, not a bad place for him to go back to. they'll get him on the cheap. So it's probably not a bad. It's actually probably not a brilliant idea. Actually, it's not a terrible idea at all. Because he can produce.
Of course he can, and especially in a good side.
Yeah, exactly. I think we sort of said that we were questioning Jordan Rapana at fullback, playing at fullback, but I think he proved us both wrong. I mean,
God.
He was pretty good, wasn't he?
He was in everything. He was in everything. And it was he nearly stopped Sivo twice. Like, you know, the Sivo try, in the 75th minute, he nearly stopped him.
Yeah.
And then with what was it, 8 seconds to go, he did stop him.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess, whether it's a little bit of controversy or not, was it your classic shoulder charge?
No, I don't think so. Personally.
Well, you've got to use your shoulder, haven't you?
Yeah,
you didn't hit him with the shoulder, so it's not a shoulder charge.
No, well, yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I'm getting at. I don't think it was an actual shoulder charge at all. That's what I'm getting at.
I don't think so at all. And when they started talking about it, it's like, yeah, okay, he's not using an arm wrapping motion to make a tackle or anything, but he hasn't hit him with the shoulder. He's hit him with his, you know, sort of lower torso. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just didn't look like a shoulder charge. Like, it didn't matter how many times they wanted to replay it over and over and over again. It's just like, who are you trying to convince? Like, I don't know. It's not a shoulder charge. You've got to use your shoulder if it's going to be a shoulder charge.
It's hard to stop Sivo. I was just looking at the stats.
He had to throw everything at him.
He weighs, except for Junior Paulo and Reewood Campbell-Gillard, which makes sense, he weighs, if not the same, or more than all the other forwards in the Parramatta Eels. just to put it in perspective. Oh, my God. And he's not that far, but he's only 10 kilos behind Campbell-Gillard. And Campbell-Gillard's just a mountain of a, like, he's a tall guy.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, he's a monster.
Imagine Siva running at you, who's not a tall guy, but just built
No, thanks.
No, I'm good.
Thanks.
I guess
a finals boosting win for Canberra to try and get themselves back in the mix to get into the top eight, and a bit of a flounder, I guess, by Parramatta.
Did you like the did you happen to watch the little Ricky doc that was out yesterday?
No, I didn't end up seeing that yet.
Yeah, no, it was pretty confronting. So, yeah, I won't go into too much, but he just why he's in Canberra and the whole thing with Canberra, but just where he wants this team to go, and he's pointing him in the right direction. Considering where we were saying at the start of the year, the Arrows.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's, I mean, yeah, they've had some lulls throughout the season, and, yeah, they've been, you know, sort of accused of being sort of, you know, the Canberra faders, especially when it comes to their second half performances. But, yeah, they're just keeping themselves afloat to be there or thereabouts come the last couple of rounds to make a bit of a push to get into the eight.
Next game was the Roosters beating the Knights 28-8.
Newcastle looked up for this in the first half. Absolutely looked up for this in the first half.
Yeah, no, I thought exactly the same thing. I thought, interesting enough, I guess I thought having both Saifidi brothers, it honestly made a big difference, to be completely honest. I think it was
and Jacob's try as well, which sort of come off there a bit of a weight of possession inside the Roosters 20, and it's just a simple angle run where you know Pong is running one angle and Jacob Saifidi is coming back on the inside running another angle. And sees a massive gap and crashes over. They should have, not so much they should have. They had the potential to get a second try not too long after that. But Tedesco hand gets in between the ball and the ball bounces. Obviously, it was off Tedesco, so it's a knock on his count. But it also bounced off Kalen Ponga's shoulder, which constitutes a double knock on and. They didn't end up getting a try in the corner, which I think sort of would have, I think they would have liked a bit more rather than just taking a penalty goal to try and put themselves, you know, 8-0 in front. And look, the Roosters just didn't really click into gear, I guess, until that probably that last 10 minutes of the
first half. I thought
Newcastle's attack, especially in that first half, like when they were attacking, like they were very one-dimensional. They totally cut off one half of the field, and they were going down their left edge, which is the Roosters' right edge, which is a weakness, which has been a bit of a weakness as of late.
But they
didn't show anything else at all. Like they just kept going to it. You've got to think on the run.
I think this is a Phoenix Carlton thing. They went down the left because that's Jake Clifford's side, and I just, and he's young and everything. It just doesn't fit there. I mean, and it's so early to say, but I just think
he got the hook right. He got the hook right in the 60th minute.
He did get the hook, so I don't think he's there. You know, honestly, I really don't think he's there, and that's why they sort of just kept peppering it down, sort of. Which is you said it, like, was it? It's their vulnerable side, the right hand side for the butt. They kept throwing it, and then it just, like I said, it was one dimensional stuff. It wasn't that exciting at all.
And it looked like it was a fairly breezy night there on the Sunshine Coast as well, and that seemed to be sort of playing havoc with the ball a little bit. And I've been sort of a little bit critical of Jake Clifford's kicking game throughout the year of, you know, bomb and hope that somebody drops it, which again is just so one-dimensional. And in a game like this where there is a lot of breeze, it totally comes back to bite you, because while the kick may go 40 meters in the air, it goes 10 meters forward and then floats 5 meters backwards because the wind's holding it up. I don't understand the tactic behind it. And then when Crossland got the hook and they put Connor Watson sort of in that half role to try and create a little bit of spark, not even that did anything.
No, you're right. They didn't. They're just a bit. They're pretty one dimensional. I don't know. Yeah. I'm thinking next year. I'm not thinking obviously the rest of this year. I don't know what they're going to do going forward. I know what you thought because I haven't talked to you about this. Of the reported, but it looks like it's all but confirmed of Dane Gagai going back to the Newcastle Knights.
Yeah, I think that's as locked in as what it can be without it being locked in. I think that's a good signing. I thought he played some of his best footy at the Knights a few years ago, so that will shore up, I guess, our centre position for them, because while they've got a little bit of depth in the outside backs, Newcastle, their hands are sometimes like shoehorns. I think they just can't catch anything.
I think it's him and Bradman Best are probably the best two.
Although
Bradman Best has sort of regressed a little bit, but yeah, that'd be your best.
He's been coming off the end of last year. He was hurt, and he just hasn't been able to stay healthy this year as well.
I think it's going to start a carousel just before we move on to the other game, like with this signing, like as in. Now that he's decided to move to South, now the South can pave the way to make a play for Anthony Milford, because they're waiting to see what Dane Gagai was going to say. That's the report now with that. And then obviously we'll mention it later that they also, and Newcastle's plan of signing a forward that was at the Melbourne Storm and it's going to be another club next year. But we'll talk about that one later. They were in for one of six clubs in for that guy, so
yeah, that's right. Yeah, there was plenty of teams in for that.
I kind of thought he would go back to Brisbane, gay guy, or at least go to Queensland. But
well, that's all reports that, you know, all fingers were pointing that way, and then all of a sudden it was a bit of a 180, and he's going to Newcastle. So that sort of came out of the blue.
I think he's just obviously got more long term protection, because that would be the biggest.
It's got to be something along those lines. The Roosters just kept chugging along, though, just to sort of finish off, I guess. Like, you know, they lost Billy Smith and Matt Ikavalu throughout this game as well, so they're severely tested in the outside back ranks at the moment. And yet, in that second half, they only not completed two sets. So they just keep steamrolling on. They've got Parramatta next week in your neck of the woods. So that'll be extremely interesting who they name, in those outside back positions, because there's going to be a lot of, I think there's going to be some out of position players.
I honestly think it's Eels too. I'm waiting to sort of see what both and the team lists that are going to be for those guys. I just because they're both sort of going through injury at the moment, so it'll be very interesting. Right. It'll be well, it won't be chilly to them, but it'll be a nice sort of brisk. I think it'll be about 12.
No, that's nothing for them.
Oh no, they'll be used to it, 100%.
Mackay locals will have to rug up a little bit, but they'll be all right.
Yeah, of course we will. So, although it looks like there's a possibility Josh Morris might be back for this game, so
they're going to have to. If they've got no choice, have they? Yeah, they essentially dropped him for this game, you know, citing four reasons and things like that, which I guess were warranted a little bit, but that they've got no choice now because they're so stretched at that outside back position. They've got no choice.
Yeah, it is confirmed actually. So yeah, Tupou, Morris, Adam Kerrigan and Manu is on the wing, so that's how it's lining up.
That's a bit of a hodgepodge of players there.
Basically. Next game was an interesting game. It was my team, Melbourne Storm, just, and I mean goddamn, just beating the Cowboys 20-16.
I guess like the Roosters from the week before, I can only assume that they come up to Townsville and just expected to come in and just totally steamroll and bulldoze their way to a victory. The scoreline last week against the Roosters suggested otherwise, but I thought the Cowboys were right in that game up until about the 70-odd minute mark with the Scott Drinkwater, you know, disallowed try with the double movement. And they just, the Cowboys just super frustrated the Storm defensively. I think it was total complacency. I think they just come up here, and whether or not Craig Bellamy wouldn't have been saying those, Craig Bellamy would have been like, don't take this team lightly, and they've come out and they've totally taken the team lightly.
Oh, I guarantee he wouldn't have said it. No, he wouldn't have.
But it's to me that they've seen how poorly the Cowboys have been defending on both edges, but most notably the right edge.
And they just
didn't have the success. I don't think like they thought they were going to.
No, you're exactly right. I don't think we did. I thought interestingly enough, we had better go forward in our forwards than our backs. Generally, it's our backs.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, it was okay, but Nico Hines wasn't really involved as much. You know, even your Addo Carrs, you know, he got some meters, but they weren't as involved. Even, you know, Jerome Hughes. I don't know if not having Munster there was an issue for him, but it was more their forwards, our forwards at least, sort of that end up getting the go forward.
Yeah, look, and that's sort of a bit of a glaring hole with the Cowboys at the moment as well, you know, is go forward. And while they were better and that what they have been better in recent weeks, one of the more perplexing positional namings that I have ever seen, especially at this club, in the naming of Jake Granville. Whilst wearing the number 14 jersey, was essentially ripped the 14 off, and he was the fullback.
Yeah.
And Hamasai Tabuai Fadeau had gone through an emergency appendectomy, so he's done for the next couple of weeks. Yeah. And as far as I'm aware, Jake Granville has been named in the number one again this week for the Broncos. So they don't see this as a one-off type thing. And look, I thought he did extremely admirable.
Oh, he was great defensively.
Hasn't played in since a junior.
Yeah. No, you're right. And you are right as well. He has confirmed he has a number one on his back against the Broncos this week. So you're exactly right there. So second week in a row.
It basically comes down to, you know, the Cowboys, you know, once again, like it's not that this game, it wasn't about the amount of errors. It was when the errors occurred. So the Addo Carr try, that was just, I'm just trying to think when it was. I think it was one of the, there was, I think it might have been the first try that they had. So Shane Wright drops the ball. And basically Addo Carr, he goes over three tackles later. Yeah. And you can't just be dropping the ball inside your own half, and especially inside your own 30, and continually give Melbourne...
Especially against Melbourne. Yeah,
do you know what I mean? Like Melbourne opportunities.
That's probably the worst team to do it against, so you're right.
Oh, yeah. No, it's absolutely. And it was... Yeah, for the score to be 2016, you know, it realistically shouldn't have even been that because, the Kane Bradley try, who scored over in the left-hand corner, was off a Murray Taulagi pass that was about 2.5 metres forward. I have no idea how the referee, the touch judge, anybody missed it. It was unbelievable how, just off one of those quick backline moves where they try and bat the ball on and just try and quick, you know, catch and pass, and it goes, or it might not have been 2.5 metres forward, but it certainly looked that way, and I was flabbergasted that none of the officials seen it, and we're actually going to give this, and the Cowboys are actually within a shot of possibly stealing this game.
Yeah.
Off an absolute howler, which even a captain's challenge, you can't challenge on a forward pass.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
It shouldn't have even been anywhere near that close. Oh, you would have been happy with the other score line being 20-12, which what it probably should have been.
Yeah, but you're right. I mean, you're exactly right. It probably should have been 20-12.
How did the officials miss that?
I don't know. This is the whole grey area of the whole forward pass.
That's unbelievable how they missed that. It was so forward.
I don't get it. Happening?
Congratulations to Addo Carr getting 100 tries.
Yeah, yeah.
And to Kyle Feld getting 100 tries, first time in NRL history that two players in the same game have scored their 100th try.
What's happening with, because he's not named this week as well, what's happening with Lachlan Burr?
Man, I think just lately he's been a liability.
Okay.
He's not getting a whole lot of go forward, and he's a penalty machine.
Because he was like the first signing that Todd Bainton was one of bad. Okay. That's interesting.
It's the same sort of thing. Like you can't be giving away penalties and gifting the opposition so much easy field position. He's been doing that a lot, and he just hasn't been creating a lot of impact.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, that's fair. No, I just wasn't sure because I didn't mind him last year at the Warriors. He was a bit of a standout at the Warriors.
No, he's had his patches where he's been sort of motivational and come off the bench and been good. But I think just as of late, you know, over the last month or so, he's really, really lacked impact. And that's what they need out of him. They need him to just be a hard running, hard nosed forward, you know, hard and straight. And challenge the line. Like, I don't think they really need a whole lot out of him. So, and that's like I said, you know, that's part of the Cowboys' detriment at the moment because they're sorely lacking in, I guess, guys who can create impact off the bench.
Next game was the Rabbitohs smashing the Warriors 60-22.
Oh man, the Warriors. Whilst they scored 22 points, showed absolutely zero of the resolve and ticker that they showed last week. Absolutely zero.
Yeah.
The Rabbitohs opened them up like a can of tuna every time they challenged them.
Yeah. No, I thought the same thing. I don't know what was happening with the Warriors. I don't know if the two of us a Sheck news through them, but I don't think that was always going to be the case, to be completely honest anyway. But they had nothing. They had nothing in offense. They couldn't complete sets that well. They just, I think the 22 actually complimented them more than anything because I don't think they were that good at all.
No, and then I guess that just sort of comes down to, I guess, the lack of depth, I guess, that they've got there at the moment. And, you know, Townsend and Nikarima just aren't really clicking at the moment. They've brought in Matt Lodge over the last couple of weeks now. I didn't think he was too bad. I don't know if you've seen, it was an Instagram video or a video that popped up on Facebook of Aiden Fanua-Blake and his compound fracture of the ring finger. It looked horrible.
Yes, it did. No, yeah.
And that's bit, that's two now in the last 2 weeks. Four. Because Jamal Fogarty, that happened to him last week. He had a compound fracture of the ring finger. So that's two of those injuries in the last 2 weeks.
Poor for Noah Blake. I mean, he's had a bad run. He's just
he's had a rotten run this year.
This year. Yeah, he's sort of just come back from injury and he's just had a rotten run. Yeah, unfortunately. So it's terrible. I don't know. I don't know where the Warriors go. I really don't know. I don't know. They seem up for it in games, and then it's sort of, I don't know. I don't know if there's go forward. I really don't know. I don't know if Jazz Tavik is really the answer there at hooker as well. It's probably the glaring obvious.
He's not really, but that's, yeah, he's not. But, you know, with Wade Egan gone now, I think he's got a shoulder injury and he's gone for the next little bit as well. So Jazz Tavunga, they've really got no other choice but to put him there unless they can, muster up, you know, some sort of miracle in the halves and bring in, is it O'Sullivan in the halves and then move Nikarima to dummy half. Like there's got to be something that they can do in that regard, but it just, you know, whether or not they've just put the queue in the rack now, especially with the two of Asa Sheck news, that he's basically done, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But I'm not sure where Brownie goes with the Warriors at the moment. They're just far enough away from the eight that I think their season, especially now with Tuivasa Sheck gone, I think that could be it. Especially if they want to continue to show the effort. It's just such a contrast of between weeks. They were really good. Do you know what I mean? Last week, in sort of holding out Penrith. While the score wasn't sort of favourable to them, but they competed right till the end, and they just looked like they just didn't have any intensity in this game at all.
No, it felt like they really didn't want to be there, and it was
and the more points that, yeah, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, 34-16 at halftime, the more points that the Rabbitohs piled on, it was that was only even more demoralising for them.
Next game was another big sort of score line. The Seagulls beating the Tigers 44-24.
Nobody really wanted to defend in this game. I didn't think, like, this was, I guess sort of one of those games that was, I wasn't sure what to really expect. When the Manly were scoring in bunches in this game, mm-hmm. when they started to get a good roll on possession wise. Mm-hmm. The same sort of thing. They just opened up the Tigers' defense at will. They were in it there or thereabouts, you know, up until halftime. And then Manly just poured it on in the second half.
Yeah, it was 48 missed tackles by the Tigers. It's absolutely ridiculous. But you're right, Manly poured it on in the second half. It was a classic Cherry Evans game where if they're in front and they're doing well, he tends to play lights out. I mean,
he plays out of his skin.
He, you know, getting 200 meters was just ridiculous in itself. Like him getting 200 meters, I've never seen that. Trbojevic just an absolute step above. It is really ridiculous how good he is.
320. Just plays footy for fun.
In this game, he kind of looked like he was playing for fun, to be completely honest.
Yeah. So, look, I think the turning point, I guess, in this game too, especially attack-wise for the Tigers, like they just, as it came towards the end of the first half and they bombed Manly's line and bombed it and bombed it. I think they had four or five sets in a row. They had a couple of set restarts in between our dropouts. Mm-hmm. And once they sort of got repelled by that, Manly just go bang, bang. Score two tries right before halftime, and that just takes all the air, you know, out of the room when you're going into the half, and you're just like, wow, we were there or thereabouts. Yeah. You know, I'm pretty sure they were up 12-10 at the time.
They were and up 12-10.
Yeah, and then all right. of a sudden, whammo, you know, Morgan Harper goes, Cherry Evans goes over after a massive break. They basically go 100 meters, and then off the kickoff, they score again. And you're just like, oh, man, like what a letdown for the Tigers to go into, you know, to put all of that offensive pressure and for Manly to absorb that, repel it, and put on 10 points in 5 minutes.
It's interesting you say that because Manly finished with less possession than the Tigers, but just to show you when they had the ball, that they made every opportunity count. With that, they
don't,
you know,
absolutely.
They even their completion rate wasn't as good, but they made every opportunity count.
But I think that, and that's the thing, that sort of went down, I guess, in the last 15 minutes of the game too, because I thought they were feeling themselves a little bit, and they start like both teams started to chuck the ball around a little bit, and it got really sloppy in that last 15 minutes. You know, purely from a Tigers perspective, they were chasing the game. So they had no option but to be a little bit frivolous with the ball. Manly's excuse, I don't know what it was. Like, I think they just thought it was going to be a little bit of, you know, bit of show time. Let's put on a bit of a show here. And it just didn't work. And it looked like it was just sloppy, crap football in that last 15 minutes. I didn't really enjoy the end of that game at all. It just wasn't very pleasing on the eye at all.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Manly were just feeling themselves, so that's a perfect way of saying it. Segueing into the next game, I think, you know, just like the Melbourne, I think Penrith were feeling themselves a little bit too when they were going up against the Broncos, just to escape with that 18-12 win. Same thing.
And I don't know why, because they've been, do you know what I mean? Like, they've been ravaged with injury in key positions, and I guess, once again, I think it was just the complacency bug had sort of hit them. Yeah. It's like, right, okay, cool, it's only the Broncos. You know, we haven't got all of our stars here at the moment, but, you know, we should be able to, you know, we should be able to just roll into Suncorp and just sort of, you know, rumble through the Broncos. And look, Brisbane defensively, I thought were really good, but Penrith weren't really throwing a whole lot at them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Their attacking options were, we'd sort of credited Tyrone May last week about how sort of well he played in that number seven jersey. It sort of went a little bit out by the wayside with Luai sort of coming back in, and you know, I think he's turning into the next generation's Cherry Evans. I think, you know, once Penrith are in front, oh boy, isn't he a cocky SOB? But when the chips are down and they get into the grind of a game, you don't see him barking at people. You don't see that big cheesy grin on his face. He doesn't. Yeah, that's, I mean, this is a real sort of war for him at the moment. And it's we've said it before. This is how the rest of the league goes, mate. It's not all roses and sunshine.
Yeah, of course.
You're going to go through a bit of attrition.
See, he's well protected and well hidden from the big spotlight of Nathan Cleary. That's the only reason he can glide along and coast along, so you don't sort of see. But like you said, when the chips are down, he stands out because he doesn't have that sort of cocky nature. And that's probably the best time to have the cocky nature. Like a Latrell sort of does. Latrell does that. He had that when they were down against New South Queensland in that third State of Origin. You know, then he niggered with gay guys. So what I'm saying is, you can have it, but keep having it all the time if that's the case.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know how much niggle there was. I think that was a genuine, you know, mate against mate sort of situation. I think there with Gagai and Latrell, I'm not sure how much niggle there was. It looked like there was a lot of blue eyes on one side and maroon eyes on the other. But look,
yeah, it was.
The Penrith spent a lot of time in that first half, a lot of time in Brisbane's 20, and just didn't really come up with a whole lot. And it sort of showed by the halftime score at 4-0. And the only reason for that was a bomb of a 2-point field goal by Dylan Edwards.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was no tries. There was a penalty goal in the 9th minute. And then this massive bomb, like right at the end.
And the penalty goal come off the flagless sin bin. So what's your opinion? And yeah, Ivan Cleary went into the press conference and had a big where. Oh, I don't know what a send off is these days anymore. Yeah. Please.
I heard it also on 360. I heard it on 360 as well. Kenty was saying the same thing. Kenzie was saying.
Oh, they're all getting stuck. They're all getting stuck. Nah, into it. Like, we need to get over. We need to get over this. Or in Magic Round, it would have been a send off. Well, guess what? It's not Magic Round. It's Round 19. Yeah. They've gone a little bit softer on this crackdown on it. It's not a swinging arm. And granted, okay, Yale wasn't, he wasn't falling or anything, but he didn't, Flegler didn't come in with a whole lot of malice or intent to cock the arm. And it's just a tackle gone wrong. And 10 minutes is 100% sufficient.
Yeah, I thought the same thing.
They're playing the result because Yale got knocked the F out. Like, he was gone. His head hit the deck afterwards. He's got a little bit of he's turning into a Boyd Cordner. He's over the last couple of years, he's had some really rough concussions as of late. And that's all they're doing. So if he doesn't drop the ball and he doesn't hit the ground like a sack of dirt, and you know, maybe gets back up and sort of shakes the cobwebs off, is everybody up in arms saying, "Oh, it should have been a send off?" No.
No, so what I was going to say, there was no malice or intent, but there definitely was there was a hint of a swinging arm. I will say that. There was definitely a hint of a swinging arm. It deserved 10 minutes, but that's it.
Of course it did.
That's it. It didn't deserve a send-off. No, there was no malice or intent, but it was a sloppy,
it's just,
you know,
one of those tackles that's gone wrong. He's tried, because it's so close to the try line, you've got no option but to try and go up above.
I just think the arm sort of slightly come back a bit. I mean, it wasn't malice, but I just think it's slightly come back a bit. And that could be the angle, but I mean, you're right.
They wanted, like you said, on 360. They're trying to compare it to the Fuimono hit on Ryan Pappenhausen. And while I guess it's sort of comparable, but I still thought there was a hell of a lot more intent on the Fuimono shot than what there was on the Flegler shot.
Who gave a bit of a lackadaisical apology too just recently. That was a bit weird, but anyway. Just about it. So.
Does he even have to give an apology?
He doesn't have to. I don't know why he even did it, but if you do it properly. He shouldn't have even done it in the first place. He didn't have to.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I think he just decided he needed to. So yeah, look, I'm in your boat. I thought the same thing. I just thought with Penrith, look, Brisbane were really, really into this. Even after that Ethan Bullimore try in the 72nd minute, they had another chance to go in, or at least sort of attempt to sort of go in that last 8 minutes. They could have easily drew this game. They just looked.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it just came alive in the last 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And Brisbane sort of come home with that wet sail and I thought too, like I thought a bit of the moment, and yeah, once again, you know, as much as I sort of like to heap a little bit on Jerome Luai, but his footy smarts didn't really come out very well in this game. So, you know, it was like 3 minutes to go. They're up 18-12, right? So it's 3 minutes to go. You've got a full set of six inside Brisbane's half. So what's the best course of action? You just bash the ball up the middle and you try and pop a field goal. But no, he tries to be a smart ass, goes down on the fifth tackle, goes down the right-hand side, puts in the worst grubber kick you've ever seen, and it goes dead. So you've given away a seven-tackle set, right? So even if you miss a field goal, at least you're giving yourself a shot at icing this game. When they went down that right-hand side for Luai, they had no chance of scoring a try because the kick was 20 metres too long.
Mm.
It went dead. It was dumb. Like, he's got to be the conductor of that orchestra while Nathan Cleary's not there. And he should have just been saying to the forwards, bash it up the middle. We either get myself or Dylan Edwards. He's just bombed a 42-meter field goal in the first half. We just hit it straight up the middle and we knock a field goal over and we don't even have to worry about it then. It's 19-12 and the game's over.
Yeah, I don't think his NRL smarts are really there. Same thing. I think he's just that perfect complement to Nathan Cleary. Nathan Cleary is that absolute ringmaster on that team, and really, honestly, I just think he's just Jerome Luai.
Steve Austin.
He's just a perfect. It's just a perfect compliment, is all I'm saying. He's just an absolute perfect compliment. He can hide behind, like, and you wouldn't even, you can't even sort of, you know what I mean? Like, he could hide his deficiencies.
He hides his yeah, like you said, he hides deficiencies. But geez, he likes to get himself, you know, in front of everything, you know, when the going's good, by jumping all over everybody when they score tries, and he likes that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who it would be like in wrestling now, where you hide your deficiencies, and then when the going's good, you're out there loud and proud. I couldn't think of anybody. I'm sure I'll think of it later. But just because you said Austin, no one clicks to mind. I nearly thought Tajiri then, but that doesn't make any sense. Oh, Tajiri.
His deficiency was only that he was small.
And then he couldn't speak English.
I guess he sort of had a little bit. It could have been like Funaki.
I know we're digressing, but that was I fell out of a YouTube hole of Austin when that whole when it was with WCW, the whole takeover sort of thing, and that was his best time. That was Austin's best time, and then he's going up to Regal, and Regal said, "Don't you bloody yell at me!" And Tajiri just went, "What are you doing? I'm not gonna." Austin went four races back to him, so I'm not gonna go into it. But yeah, anyway, it's hilarious. They just found a massive YouTube hole.
you can get stuck in a wormhole when you start going down the route of 1997 to 2002 wrestling.
Oh, he was his heel character was, that's the best thing I've ever seen. That when he just, because it was hilarious too.
And he was so apprehensive to do it too, because he didn't think it was going to sort of work, but he was just so over.
The eyes and everything, just like, you know, like Hugh Morris. Anyway, the next game, one of your teams decided to win for once, but the Titans beat the Dragons 32-10.
Is that funny?
Well, you know, it's supposed
is
to be
that
funny.
Humorous?
I guess I'm pathetic. Oh man, this was an easy one to pick. The Dragons are pretty decimated. They're still reeling from who they can in and who could be in the side and who can't be in the side.
Yeah, who can play and who can't. For me, I guess this was a glimpse into the future for the Gold Coast, with Toby Sexton being named at halfback in replacement of Jamal Fogarty, who, yeah, sort of said before, he's got that. Ring finger injury, so they kind of
looks
no...
like he's 12. Just he looks 12 in the face. I've never seen someone that looks so young on the face. But anyway, I mean, he's young. He's 20. So
I guess the plot on the plus side, I think for the Dragons, really, they did make some really good inroads up the middle. I thought their forwards sort of laid a really good platform for them, but they just didn't have the quality, or the class in the halves to try and trouble the Gold Coast, even though the Gold Coast haven't been great defensively basically all year. But they just looked, especially, yeah, well, a lot of their attacking options, they're pretty, even with Benny Hunt there, you know, they're pretty ordinary. You could see they're extremely, once again, another team that was one dimensional, like everything basically had to go through Ben Hunt because they've got nowhere else to go except for Matt Duffy. Look, Matt Duffy troubled the Gold Coast a little bit. He made a couple of a good line breaks, and he was sort of chopped down by AJ Brimson a couple of times, which mm-hmm. I thought was a really good matchup. But the David Fifita try, like just before, you know, sort of in the last 10 minutes, he had three guys hanging off him. And he's still just bulldozes his way over. And look, he come off the bench in this game. I think Justin Holbrook is just trying to get him motivated, bring him off the bench and say, look, you know, go try and go up the middle a little bit. And whilst he did that, he still sort of reverted back over to that right-hand side attack. And boy, did he would have given Cody Ramsey nightmares, because he targeted him a lot.
Ah, yeah, he did. No, you're right. He absolutely did. I did think, you know, the Toby Sexons of the world, and even I think it was Greg Garb. Is it Marju or Majer?
Greg Marju, yeah.
He was. Yeah, they were both good in this game. They both ran the ball pretty effectively, which is good, which you don't really see from a halfback. That's probably not too bad. Like, Toby's not as bad as, I mean, he's only new, he's only young, but like you said, like, a glimpse into the future, he was pretty good as a ball-running halfback. Usually you see a ball-running halfback, but not so much
halfback. And that's what they've got to do. You take the pressure off him, say, look, kid, run the ball. Ash Taylor will control the game, you know, with his kicking game. And just go out there and sort of, yeah, don't put a lot of pressure on him, even though he was taking the goal kicks as well. And a couple of those kicks too, man, he was kicking right into the sun. And I think there was two of them there that he slotted. I'm pretty sure it was the last. He slotted both of them. It's like, man, right into the sun. And he still kicked them. It's like,
yeah,
oh,
he didn't miss the whole game. He was awesome.
He looks good.
Yeah, no, he does. He does look good. And just with the Dragons, I just think it was just it's just cohesiveness. It's not, you know, it's not their, well, it is their fault. It's not all the players' fault, but it's just cohesiveness. And that you could just tell certain, you know, not having certain players there did make a difference. I know it sounds as simple as that, but it is as simple as that.
Look, two weeks in a row now, their ball handling in the second half has been diabolical.
Yeah.
There's no other way to put it. They just could not hang on to the ball. And if you gift the Gold Coast enough ball, they'll make you pay for it, especially if you're not the best sort of defensive side going around. So this is the first time that the Gold Coast have actually beaten a top eight side, or, you know, a side that's that's in the top eight. So I guess a little bit of confidence for them going into the last few rounds of the season. But look, yeah, a confidence boosting win for the Gold Coast. And it's just going to be, I think it's just going to be more pain for another couple of weeks for the Dragons.
And the final game was the Sharks decimating the Bulldogs 44-24. Excuse me. I don't know. It felt like, for me, just for the Sharks at least, it was a bit of a statement game from them. I didn't have anything on the line to do it, but it just felt like a very, very statement sort of game.
It really could have got embarrassing for the Bulldogs if they hadn't have had that sort of hot first, you know, 15 or so minutes of that second half, where they just come out and basically two bombs and two tries to start that second half, because, yeah, it could have really got out of hand. Cronulla looked like that. They were in a mood to put some points on, and they did.
Yeah, and they definitely did.
Canterbury had five completed sets in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, when you just can't get a hold of the ball, like, what are you meant to do? Like, that's been part of their problem all year. It's like the Cowboys. It's not the amount of mistakes, because they've got one of the better completion rates going around in the league. It's just when you make the mistakes. And if you're constantly making them in your own half, then you give the opposition too many opportunities.
I thought, you know, while I think it was pretty clear, just for Luke Thompson, that was probably the best game I've seen him play since he's been in those Bulldogs colours.
He was a monster.
Yeah, and he got a try himself, but he was just a monster up the middle. He was good, and on sort of the edges, he was really good.
But his try at the middle, that was footwork, that was power.
And that's what they wanted. That's what they signed him for.
Yeah, it was crazy athlete, and that's what they bought. That's what the Bulldogs bought. That's why they brought him over here from England.
Yeah, I think they're doing the right thing. I mean, I don't think the losses. It's funny, you hear more about the Bulldogs than any other team, considering where they're sitting on the table, because of who they're signing and where they're going next year.
Talking about the 16th place team a little bit too much, but I guess it's in a positive.
That's what I mean.
Light, because they're getting their recruitment right, it looks like.
Yeah, so exactly. So it doesn't matter if they have these L's and they're tinkering with the side, because it doesn't seem to bother anybody, because they're more talking about how they're going to be next year. So they're not in a bad position to be in. Yeah, it's not
you don't want to be, you know, getting a wooden spoon under your belt if you're Trent Barrett, but they had, especially after that Luke Thompson try, two just, you know, exponential brain farts pretty much straight after that. Like, Dylan Napa makes the first hit up after the kickoff and then tries to flop the ball out the back, drops it, and then it's compounded by Luke Thompson being binned for a late shot. So he got sent to the bin for that. And then while he was in the bin, Cronulla had 87% of possession.
Yeah.
So you defend yourself into a standstill, And then if you've got a little bit of energy left at the half and you do get some quality possession inside Cronulla's 20, you can't do anything with it.
Yeah.
And while I'm, while I'm sort of on that subject, like Jake Avarillo, how many shots do they want to give this guy at halfback? And you can't tell me that Kyle Flanagan is no better.
Interestingly,
Are they kidding?
It's interesting you. You're right. I mean, clearly I agree with you because I don't get. I think I texted you the other day and just said,
why do they continue? You know they're shopping around.
You know they're shopping around. Yeah, I text you and saying, you know they're shopping him around. So, interesting enough, like he's Flanagan's been named this week against the Titans and Avarillo's 5'8". So, I think they can just keep doing this, chopping and changing, and just sort of see like what you know.
When you're chopping and change your halves combination like that, that's not good for continuity. Like it's hard enough for them to build pressure offensively the best of times.
I like the kid from in the Sharks. I think this is just a glimpse into their future. I like the kid in 5'8", that Braden Trindle. He's playing halfback this week.
He is good.
Only 22, so I think, you know, they're not going to have a Sean Johnson next year or a Matt Moylan
doesn't look like they're going to have Sean Johnson for the foreseeable future at the moment because he did his hamstring in this game and he could be gone for 2 months.
So, you know, I think you're right. Yeah, no, he's gone for 2 months. So, I think he's 22. He's a ball running half, which, you know, I think anybody I like a ball running half. I like in general, but I do love
as long as you've got the right complementary halves partner that's got a good controlling kicking game.
Well, he's playing halfback this week with Connor Tracy, which if you know Matt Morland doesn't even get a look in, he's 18th man next week. So yeah, interestingly enough, yeah, I know. Well, you know,
and he's supposedly the one they want to keep.
They want to chuff
Johnson out the door.
Before we move on to studs and duds, how much, unreal. You know, and this is for any of them, but I mean, obviously glaringly Fitzgibbon, how much influence do you think they have on the current year's team of where they, you know, where they play and everything? Do they have any influence? I don't think they do, but I'm just wondering if you think they have
it. Well, they shouldn't, but because it's not Fitzgibbon's team yet.
Well, that's what I mean. I think because it's not his team yet, but I'm wondering if he says certain players. He's not going to say certain players, but about trying combinations and that. I wonder if that's, you know.
Why would Henne want to listen to that? Like, you know, Henne.
I'm saying if he's doing a quiet word to the board and then the board talks to Henne or something. I mean, it probably doesn't. I'm just curious if that happens. I don't know.
I mean, it's possible, but they've just got to look at the season at hand. And, you know, they're sort of there or thereabouts around that bottom part of the eight. And that's all they should be focusing on at this point in time.
So straight into the studs and duds of the week. So what did you have down for your start of the week?
Start of the week this week for me is Damien Cook.
Damien Cook.
At his dangerous best running the ball. Man, they had such quick play the balls against the Warriors. He was unbelievable how often he took on the line, how quickly he was getting out of dummy half, how much he was exploiting the poor marker work by the Warriors and challenging, just getting around the marker so easy and challenging that line of defense and putting Souths on the front foot, you know, to be able to score those six. I don't think that they're able to score those 60 points without Damien Cook putting them on the front foot as much as what he did.
Nah, that's true. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I can see that. You're exactly right there.
Look, if they're going to be serious about making a grand final, this is the kind of form that Damien Cook has to show.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I totally agree with that. I just couldn't get past Tom Dvojevic. I just think every time I see him, I think he's just absolutely invincible. Yeah, I really do.
He kind of is.
I really do.
He is until he isn't. Until those hamstrings or those calves give out again. But yeah, you see those videos like of his pre-game, you know, sort of workout, I guess, or he sort of gets he gets the physio there, and he sort of, yeah, he punishes his legs a little bit and sort of, you know, goes through the rigors of a you know, trying to stretch those hamstrings out really well before he goes out there. So hopefully that sort of looks like it's doing wonders for him. But yeah, look, he's a Terminator at the moment. He's just he's one of the most impossible guys to stop at the moment.
He is. He's one of the most impossible guys to stop. What about your dud of the week?
Look, just Newcastle's lack of effort in that second half. They were right there or thereabouts, you know, in that Roosters game. A couple of outside backs down, the Roosters were. So I don't think that they attacked those weaknesses enough out on the edges, because they just had to keep pushing guys further and further wider, like, you know, bigger guys like your Satili Tupanuas and Radley and Angus Crichton. Those guys had to keep sort of pushing out further and further, you know, into those centre positions to cover. I don't think Newcastle did enough to try and exploit that. And the lack of effort and intensity in that second half, when the game really was there for them to take, I thought was really poor, and you could see it on Adam O'Brien's face. The last couple of tries that the Roosters scored, he was pissed, and I don't think he likes that effort that's being put out there at the moment. Like I said, you know, they gave Phoenix Cross on the hook. I don't know where he goes without a healthy side at the moment. Like, you know, they've got a really good side on paper, Newcastle, but when the injury bug bites and it's bitten them hard, they just don't have the quality depth there.
I just gave it to the Eels because I thought this was just a game that they really should have won against the Raiders.
Yeah.
I mean, and they just didn't. I mean, it sounds as black and white as that is. They just didn't. They just didn't seem to win at all. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Do you know what I mean? It took them till like the 65th minute to score their first try. Like, that can't happen against the Raiders side that, do you know what I mean, that hasn't been that they've been getting better over the last few weeks. But if you want to entrench yourself in the top four, and, you know, and be a premiership threat, and okay, they didn't have Mitchell Moses there, but you've got the forward pack to be able to, you know, to really be able to bash Canberra out of existence.
And yeah, that's right.
Like you said, they just didn't do that.
Yeah. No, they didn't.
I thought they were a bit of a rudderless ship.
So moving on to some news. I think we mentioned it before, but Tua Vaisashek is there's COVID reasons and everything, but they've effectively released Roger Tua Vaisashek back to New Zealand, which basically means he's finished with the New Zealand Warriors.
Yeah, that's right. Look, he had to make the dash home before the borders closed. So he took that hard knock the week before against Penrith. So that sort of rattled his cage a little bit. But he wanted to get home before the border closed. So that's basically called time on his career. At 28 and, you know, I've said it before, like all the good players, especially when they sort of want to go represent the All Blacks and blah, blah, blah. He'll be back. Like he'll get over Union real quick, because if they put him in the centers or out on the wing, he won't touch the ball ever. And after a few years of that, they get bored with it. They all come back. And they go, wow, I really took rugby league for granted because, hey, I can actually get my hands on the ball here.
I just think I just think it's like a New Zealand calling card. I don't know. It sounds as dumb as that sounds. I just think they all want to play for the All Blacks. I think it's one of his calling cards. It sounds
and he's
weird.
He's classy enough to do that. Look, you know, he's got the resume. Like he's played just under 200 first grade games.
Yeah,
he's played 20 tests for New Zealand. He's got a golden boot in 2019. He won a premiership at the Roosters in 2013. He was the Dally M winner in 2018. So he's got the class. But it'll just be a matter of who he comes in for in that All Black side and what, you know, where he plays. If he signed with the Auckland Blues, So that's where he's going to get his bread and butter from with the Auckland Blues. But it just what happens if and when he makes that All Black side? Like it's I don't know.
Yeah, no, I thought the same thing. I thought exactly the same thing. Not sure. I don't know if he will. I don't know. But no, well, you know, surely he's not. That's the other thing. Is he getting the same amount of money?
I would have thought that it would be fairly comparable. I would have thought they would have shelled out some big bickies to get somebody like Tuivasa-Sheck.
I thought so. Yeah, I definitely thought so. So. But we'll just have to wait and see, I guess.
I'm not sure what their pay structure is with representing New Zealand as well. So, whether it's a bit more, a bit more of a paycheck than like it is with representing your country in rugby league.
Other couple of bits of news: the Api Korosau has, effectively he's come clean about obviously what the COVID sort of breach, which he got handed a 2-game suspension as well as a $35,000 fine.
Had no choice to come clean though, didn't he?
Had no choice, yeah, exactly.
Since when did like rugby league players all of a sudden just turn into such horn bags?
I don't know.
It's unbelievable.
I don't know.
Wife and kids at home and just can't stop swinging.
Stop swinging. that's the best way to put it.
The 18th man. I won't get a gig.
Yeah. And it's funny that the woman in question has been identified as someone other than his wife. Well, clearly. But I did read just with Brandy Alexander coming out and saying it's possible he won't even get to play for New South Wales anymore now. He's done that detriment. It's very possible. So, well, you know, Brandy's on the board. Why not?
No, well, that's right. Yeah, he's a consultant there for New South Wales. So it's that's his club too. That's his boys. So I'm sure he would have been extremely disappointed with what with how Appy had sort of behaved behind, you know, those COVID closed doors and what I guess sort of the, it's different if it was in, you know, any other era, but in this sort of, you know, the ramifications of, you know, a COVID shutdown because, you know, he can't keep it in his pants for 10 days while he's in camp, that they're huge, you know, applications there of just how stupid it is. And it's just like, man, I was stunned when that news came out. It's just like how lackadaisy is this supposed security?
I don't know. But if they don't, you know, if all these players don't smarten up and do the right thing, then there is going to be no comp for the rest of the year. If the Queensland government just decides to go, sorry, too bad.
That's right. Apparently, the NRL's on their last legs at the moment. Supposedly, with the Queensland government, they've come out and said, you know, no more. You know, with this, with the couple of breaches that they sort of had with a couple of douchebag families trying to, you know, give marshmallows to, you know, other families that are above them. Give me a break. Marshmallows, really? Marshmallows, like you can't go without marshmallows.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. You can't go that much.
It's not as if they'll bloody hand bottles of rum up to them or bottles of beer or friggin', you know, something that you might actually need to get you through this time of crisis. But no, it's got to be marshmallows, please.
And I guess last sort of bit of news, the Dale Finucane has become the latest, I guess, prize piece for Craig Fitzgibbon's sort of overhaul where he signed a 4-year contract.
That's what he wanted.
34. That's exactly what he wanted. So the Dragons, Dragons did likewise, but the Dragons just didn't clearly offer enough. So
everybody else's was a 3-year deal because I know the Cowboys up here was a 3-year deal.
Well, the Dragons apparently was, but I think the $2.5 million.
I think it's 2.5. Yeah, that's right. For 4 years, that's some good cookies there.
Yeah, that's some
and
real
you take them. Absolutely, you take them.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's the final year, his wage drops markedly down. So I think it's something along the lines of what I read. It was like 700, 700, 700, and then like 400 or something along those lines. So
fair enough. That's fine. See, that's how you back end a contract.
Yeah, you don't back end
a contract more. Yeah. You back end a contract less.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right.
I think some NBA teams could learn from that.
I thought the same thing. What do you think of the signing?
Oh yeah, no, terrific signing for Cronulla. Like, you know, while they are sort of letting and they've got, you know, they've got a lot of money to sort of play with too. You know, they're letting the likes of Fifita and Dugan and Josh and Sean Johnson go, which is freeing up, you know, an absolute crap load of money for them. So they've got the money to be able to go out there and flaunt that and try and get in some guys that Craig Fitzgibbon is high on, and you know, Nico Hines and Dale Finucane out of the Melbourne Storm system.
He's going to the right team.
Well, that's right. He's going to the right well.
Yeah, he's going to the right well. That's exactly right. I don't think I did mention the other bit of news, which was Bellamy re-signing effectively with the Melbourne Storm on a weird sort of contract. So it's a 5-year.
It's a strange sort of way that they've sort of structured this contract and how they want to do it. They've given him sort of a lot of flexibility on whether or not he wants to continue coaching and whether he wants to go into the front office after a couple of years. But it's essentially like a 5-year lockup, isn't it?
Essentially, it's a 5-year lockup, $1.2 million a year, reportedly. Nice. After next year, he then has the option. Next 2 years. I think it's next year or the next 2 years. But he basically has the option of he can move straight onto the board as like a director of coaching or a coaching consultant and pick his own
coach
to replace him. So
and it just depends on whether or not, you know, he's still you know, enjoying coaching as well. He might just go the 5 years and continue to coach.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly what I thought. So
I think it's the flexibility that I think is, apart from the $1.2 million a season, I think the flexibility of what he wants to do is a bit of a sweetener in that deal as well.
Yeah, I think it's a flexibility because he can come. I think after the next year, he'll probably want to come back up here more and back up to home more. But yeah, it's great for Melbourne. It's very good for Melbourne. So
well, he's had 20 odd years at the Melbourne Storm. By the end of that first 2 years, like did he start there in 2003?
Yeah, 2003. Yeah, this is the next year will be his 20th year.
Yeah, so that's just crazy. Yeah, that's Wayne Bennett like. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, having that sort of longevity at one club and to be and you don't get to have that kind of longevity at the one club if you're not successful, if you're not winning trophies.
Yeah, it's funny. And they filmed it too, and they announced it to all the players. And Munster responded, are you going to have 4 staff next year or 2 because of the money you're taking? And then Bellamy comes straight back and goes, no, 2. How many do we have in our salary cap? Are we at 30 or 25 because of the money you're getting to Munster?
Yeah, no, that's right. So, I did see the end of that video where he made a bit of a gave a bit of a jab about what have we got left in the salary cap?
Yeah, and he come return serve straight away, so that was awesome. So
yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
I think that's just one more little
tidbit before we go. And to, you know, I think for both of us, I think it's a significant blow, especially for what's meant to be happening at the end of the year, which is a Rugby League World Cup. And in the news that Australia and New Zealand have both pulled the pin and basically told World Cup organisers that we're putting our players' safety first, and they will not be attending the Rugby League World Cup at the end of this year, which is, to say the least, extremely, extremely disappointing.
Mm, I don't know if it's extremely disappointing, but I mean, it's disappointing, but it's, I don't know, maybe it's just the way, I guess it sort of goes kind of thing. Like, you know, if they don't think they're going to be safe enough, then that's just the way that is.
Look, I get the, you know, that England's just sort of basically opened back up again in the last couple of weeks, and you know, they're allowed to sort of get around again. I was watching that Road to the Ashes podcast on Fox Sports, and Michael Atherton sort of, he was talking about it. It was like a day after that they'd sort of basically reopened the country, and everybody was sort of, you know, getting back out and being normal again, even though they were sort of still having, you know, I think it was like over 1,000 or so COVID cases every day. But they just can't keep everybody cooped up, locked up, the economy down over there. That they just couldn't afford to continue to do that. So they've got to try and work their way through it. Look, yep. It's not as if they're going to be put in harm's way over there. They're going to be in the same sort of, you know, security bubble, biosecurity protocols that they're in here. I don't understand it. It's another nail in the coffin for International Rugby League.
That's exactly right. That's the best way to put it. That's exactly right. It is. It really is.
There's only one team that benefits from this, and that's England, because they might actually be able to win a World Cup.
Yep. So, I mean, this could all change, and there could be different ways of doing it. We'll have to find out. They could relocate it. There could be huge, you know, different things, but we'll just have to wait and see, I guess.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, you know, the International Rugby League Commission, or, you know, whoever puts on, whoever the board is that puts on this tournament, is meant to come down with a decision and a ruling. I don't know what they're going to do in the next couple of weeks or the next week about, you know, what to do with the tournament, whether or not they're going to carry on. Australia and New Zealand going to receive sanctions over this for, you know, pulling the pin basically, you know, 4 months away from the tournament.
Yeah.
I don't know what the ramifications of this can be. And it just means that, yeah, it's, I mean, your two top nations are not competing. And I think that's a detriment to the whole tournament.
Yeah. No, I agree. I totally agree. But that's.
Look, it opens it up. Boy, it opens it up.
Which is interesting, because then there's going to be some, you know, people that are playing in the NRL that are going to be going over there. So how's that, you know?
That's right. They're just saying Australia, New Zealand, where, you know, where 95% of representatives are coming from here, but you're also going to have representatives that are there for, you know, for the Pacific Island teams. Yeah, there's guys that are playing here in Australia that will be representing England.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, no, so that's exactly right.
Do you know what I mean? It was so disappointing to hear. You know, I was very, very much looking forward to the World Cup at the end of the year, and for this to happen, it sucks. And yeah, it just means that this, in this sort of, I guess in this limited travel world that we're in at the moment, that the international game is dead.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to say, I hate to say that, and I really hope that, you know, as of next year or something like that, they bring back the Anzac test around the Anzac Day weekend. Yeah, just so we can get a glimpse at the green and gold again. Come on.
I tell you what, if another team, like a Pacific Island team, pulls out, it's going to be very interesting. England, no one over there will, but I'm saying like a Samoa or a Tonga or someone like that, if they pull out. Be very interesting.
Well, you know, and I think they would be extremely buoyed by the fact that Australia and New Zealand aren't there, because they would be like, oh man, we got a genuine shot now.
Yeah, they don't have to
sort of, you know, go out there and doctor results in regards to, oh, you know, we want to duck Australia, or we want to duck New Zealand, you know, in the quarterfinals or the semifinals. They should absolutely have enough confidence in their team to say, hey, we can beat anybody.
Each team will be saying that same thing, that we can beat anybody. So, yeah, that's exactly right. It'll be interesting. We'll just have to wait and see what happens.
And I think, you know, and whether or not they can just go, right, well, let's just shit can it and let's have it at the end of next year. Like, I don't know how much more you can just keep pushing things back. Like, we've already done it with the Olympics. Like, we're just, you know. But
you could do it with League. League's not too bad. You probably could do that with League. No?
Oh, I mean, yeah, you could, because it's not. That's what I mean. It's not like the Olympics where it's affecting, you know, a hell of a lot more countries. But I just think this would be, you know, logistically a lot easier to sort of organize it just in that sort of regard. And if they sort of still want to have, you know, these biosecurity protocols over there, it's the same. And whether or not they've just come to the fact of, oh, it's just like, oh, well, geez, you know, everybody in this country has been, you know, basically in those biosecurity protocols all year. Do we want to go over to England and have another 5 weeks or 6 weeks in a tournament setting and still have those same restrictions on us?
That's so exactly right.
That's the only thing that I can think of. It's more of a mental well-being type thing rather than actually, do you know what I mean? Then saying that, oh, you know, the safety and well-being of our players, and it's more of a mental health thing.
I think it's more of a mental health thing. Yeah, exactly right. No, I thought the same thing. So, that will do it, because that was an action-packed NRL pod. Don't forget, we've got our socials as always. I'm just looking at your facial expressions. Twitter at Final Play Pod, Facebook Final Play Podcast. Spotify, you have gimco.com.au, so everywhere you can get our podcast.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we're on plenty of platforms. Easy enough to find us. So, you know, just like and share and do all that sort of good stuff for us and get us out there. So, but yeah, that's. We've sort of come to a bit of a standstill, I guess, in sport at the moment. You know, we've done our NBA finals, and we're just now it's eagerly awaiting, you know, in the next sort of 6 weeks or so, and let's get the NFL on.
Yeah, we talked about it. We may throw a Marvel pod in there just to sort of rank movies, which is going to be extremely hard, but we'll just take that as it comes.
No, I mean, if we get bored.
If we get bored, that's exactly right. So,
I mean, there's plenty of Marvel TV to watch at the moment too. So,
well,
you know,
we're not going to get bored, but I'm saying if we get bored and not, yeah, if people want to hear it out there, that'll be interesting if people want to hear it. So,
well, to me, we did something like this, you know, a year or so ago when Avengers Endgame came out, we sort of did a little bit of Phase 3 and 4 action. So, if you want to,
good point,
sort of dig through our library all the way back, you know, probably 12 or 14 months ago, you could find that content. You know, we also did a thing on the Cricket World Cup, you know, when that was on too. So, you know, we're diverse. So
we are.
Yeah.
We are diverse. I'm signing off just because
in that regard, anyway.
I'm signing off as, my name's Jason Swingin' Smith. That's hilarious.
Don't let Emma hear you say that.
No, that's all good.
Look, why? Like, did he really think that he was going to keep this from anybody?
Yeah, no.
Yeah. I guess I'll sign off as, you know, oh man. You just, Appy, what are you doing? Yeah, Miles, Appy, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Plum, like, yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what he thinks he's doing. I really don't. It was absolutely, especially when it's already happened to one player. Obviously it wasn't around the same time, but it's not the point. It still happens to another player.
But
so.
That's the thing. Jai Arrow, you know, at least he sort of didn't have any kids or, you know, a wife involved or anything like that. Like, he had a significant other, but this is a wife and kids.
Yeah,
involved in this. Like, it's just, you can say it's dumb all you like, but you just don't know what was going through his head.
I don't think he knows. Oh, well, no, sorry.
Well, I
he
guess just, we kind of know what was going through.
I think I know where
it
was going through his head.
You know, that he's just a total hornbag. But, you know, they should just be knocking out. You're in an Origin camp. Were you that bored?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah, you're that bored.
Yeah.
Unreal.
All right, have a good week, everyone.
All right, see ya.